Hour number two of the weekend auto here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton, and now my dog Sadie has joined the party. So we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And are you going to leave? Okay. My dog has decided to crash the party, gentlemen. So
what kind of dog?
She's a beagle.
Love the beagles.
She's an old girl, but she's decided that she's going to join the party. Oh, never mind. There she goes. Anyways, to start hour number two, as we usually do, we'll give you the weekend poll. And today's question was a doozy. Which era of the Titans uniforms is the best? The original Houston Oilers, the OG Titans, the original Titans that came here in 1999, right? Am I right, guys? Yes.
97, no? But they changed it. 97.
Yeah, the actual Titans year was, 99.
So I was good. Good job by me. The rebrand that they did in 2018, and of course, the new iteration that came out just the other day. Through all of our votes today, 52.2% say the new iteration of the Tennessee Titans. 30.4 say the original Titans. 13 say the original Houston Oilers. And as usual, we knew that it was going this way. 4.3 say the Titans rebrand from 2018. And I have to disagree with the majority of you. I think the original two-tone blue is the best that this franchise is ever going to look. It's classic. The white helmet with the navy tops and the white bottoms is tremendous. My favorite is the white top with the light blue bottoms. I think that looks fantastic. But there's just something original about that look here. And, you know, it takes me back to my childhood where I remember watching Chris Johnson and Marcus Mariota wear those jerseys. Maybe it's the nostalgia talking, but those are my favorites of all time. But I really like the new ones. As I said earlier in the show, I really like how the new ones look. And moving forward, I think that's the best look for them. 50.4, over 50% of you agree with that. So I like the original. That's just my opinion. But I think the new look is going to look great moving forward.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be nice. The poll question is spot on. I just feel like some of the voters are going through the honeymoon phase right now of just like, oh my goodness, this looks fantastic. I'm with you, Connor. I think the OG Titans look is kind of the route I'm going to take because, again, you made it made a great point at the top of the show is that we all grew up with the flaming thumbtack. We all grew up with the navy blue jerseys. We all grew up with watching Steve McNair, Eddie George, even one of our counterparts, Derek Mason.
I didn't.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But it just
he was gone by the time I was born.
That's right. I keep forgetting about that. Yeah, we're a little bit of an age gap there. Yeah, I was born in 98, funny enough. So, like, it's right when the Titans were
yeah, me and Connor were only alive to see Derek Mason beat the Titans, actually play for him, unfortunately.
Yeah.
My bad. But
Jets legend, Derek Mason.
There you go. No, just that team, just in general, those – late 1990s, early 2000s teams wearing the original Titans colors. That's what everybody remembers. Everybody remembers the Algie Crumplers. Everybody remembers the Frank Wycheks, the
Javon
Brad
Curse.
Hopkins, the freak Javon Curse. I mean, Albert Hainsworth, Kyle Vandenbosch. Every time I look at the navy blue jersey and I think of an edge rusher, number 93, Kyle Vandenbosch with the red contact lenses. How could you not be scared to go up against that guy? I'd be literally petrified. I mean, that guy, I started wearing contacts at like 11 or 12, and I asked my optometrist, I was like, hey, can I get red contacts? Like, everybody wanted to be Kyle Vandenbosch at recess. Like, I got to go after the quarterback. Give me red contacts. But I never ended up getting those because they were very expensive at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it takes me back to my favorite Titan of all time, and that's Mr. Monday Night, Keith Bullock. And I love Kevin Byard as well and Derrick Henry. But Keith Bullock is one I remember watching. I don't know what it is. Maybe it was the highlights or something, but that guy just made a play. And I always go back to just seeing them in that white helmet with the navy blue top and the navy blue bottoms and him playing on Monday Night Football. It's just something about those uniforms that do it for me. Again, maybe the nostalgia talking, but there's something about it. I am appreciative of the lack of interest that the 2018 rebrand got. I don't think they're bad. Okay, let me just say that. I think it is the worst that this franchise has ever looked. They're not awful, but the numbering was weird. You had the swords on the shoulder that just kind of just didn't match the whole vibe. The Navy helmet was all right, but it was pretty unoriginal. There are teams across the league that also have a Navy helmet. So, look, I like that look. I used to like the code blue, as they called it, where it was all the light blue and the Navy helmet. That was cool to me. But, you know, I think it's a low point in what the Tennessee Titans look like in the uniform department. So, to Robbie's point that he made yesterday, I think anything would have been an upgrade from them. I don't think they were the worst in the league, but I think anything would be an upgrade from them. So I know it's just the new look is great. I love it. But to me, nothing beats the original Titans look.
Yeah, if we're talking about terrible jerseys or just terrible like uniform combinations, I would go with the Jacksonville Jaguars, like their helmets that were mustard. Gold. No, the mustard, but like they had the gold helmet.
Oh,
it
was
in the
like
back,
half gold, half black.
And half black.
Just, and then like, what are they doing?
All was matted. Yeah. Get rid of that.
That was disgusting.
Exactly.
It was terrible.
But
you have fond memories of that, where they wore that helmet and the mustard against the Titans, where they wore light blue and the white helmet.
One of the Thursday night football games of all time.
Yes.
My take on the 2018 redesign, though, is I think the redesign we just got a couple days ago is the exact opposite of the 2018 design, because I think the 2018 one, they tried too hard. They just did a little bit too much with it, in my opinion. I think the one a couple days ago, simple is good for me. Simple is always going to rule the day for me. Like, simple is always good for me, and I think they knocked that out of the park. Oh, my only critique is the red face mask, which I think we all agree with. That it would just make everything pop, but...
Yeah, it would, but I understand why they didn't do it. You don't want a complete carbon copy of the Houston Oilers, so I understand it, but it would look way better. I think you're right, Christian, in that old rebrand from 18 was doing too much. It was trying to fit with the next generation and the futuristic aspect. And nowadays, I think you're right in that simple is better. There's such thing as too simple and too basic. I don't think these jerseys fit that. I think the six string is amazing. I love the helmet. I love the colors overall. So I think simple is better, and I think they executed to a T. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 8586 says, Randall, in God we trust Godfrey. Doesn't get the credit he deserves. That is true. Randall Godfrey was a good player.
Indeed he was, yes. Sorry, I didn't know if he was going to me for that or my bad. Yeah.
I thought he had more to say there, too.
Yeah.
We both froze. Sorry
left it open-ended there for there, Connor.
I like you on your toes. Apparently, I can't keep myself on my toes, but I like to keep you on my toes.
That's what she said. I don't know if you heard that one, but yeah.
I heard it.
I heard it. I don't know if anybody else heard it.
Family show, pal.
Yeah.
You need to watch your mouth.
I know, right? But no, you're right. Yeah, Randall Godfrey, great player. Overall, just the uniform combinations. And again, something that you mentioned earlier about Burke Nyhill with the Navy, if the Titans go with a Navy jersey combination, that helmet needs to have a Navy face mask. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but if Navy's going to be a primary alternate third jersey, have a Navy face mask. I promise you it will pop.
Or a Navy helmet. Just go Navy.
Yeah, I think keeping the white helmet, it stays on brand. I don't know.
Okay, so you think if they do a Navy alternate, you keep the white helmet with that?
Yeah.
Or like, do you change everything like on the helmet to Navy as well, or just keep it all light blue, too?
You know the third alternate North Carolina Tar Heels had in football?
Yeah.
That all Navy look?
Okay.
And they had the accent of the like their little Columbia blue action? Do that, and wherever there's white on the uniform, add an extra accent of red.
Okay.
And then for the face mask and helmet, which is theirs is all white, put a little blue in there. I think the Navy blue would really
see that
pop.
Working.
Yeah.
I can see that working.
Yeah, it could work. I like that. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Now I'm tossing to break. Coming up next, it's a big weekend for our city here in Nashville. In case you haven't noticed, at Bridgestone Arena, there's some little basketball tournament going on called the SEC Tournament. And the semifinals for that begin today. And your Vanderbilt Commodores are taking on the Florida Gators. We'll get into all the headlines of that coming up next here on the program. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. Ah, yes, the greatest music in the history of sports. Just let you know that We're here. March is here, and come tomorrow, we'll have a bracket. And if you're sick like me and Christian, you're probably filling out every single team as that selection show is going on. But we've got a ways to play before that happens. The SEC semis are going on today over at Bridgestone Arena. Vanderbilt taking on Florida, and Ole Miss taking on Arkansas. How about that? Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you on the Weekend Huddle on this Saturday. And let's begin with Vanderbilt. They get the big win yesterday over Tennessee. Duke Miles with 30 points. He led them to victory. And I told Jake yesterday when I was on with him, I think this is going to be the tale of who can get things done on offense. I thought it would be Tyler Tanner to take over for Vanderbilt, but Duke Miles was the story. And Nate Ament played well yesterday as well. Overall, it was just a matter of defensive intensity that came through for Vanderbilt. And they get the win. They're advancing to the SEC semifinals to take on maybe the hottest team in the nation in Florida.
Yeah, Florida is a team that just has no quit, no stop. I mean, they no offense, Carmen, but they took Kentucky to the cleaners twice. I mean,
oh, they did
last three weekend, times. And three times really. But it's just crazy how quick they score in transition. As for Vanderbilt, I'm not sure what their game plan is today, but I'm sure Mark Byington has something up his sleeve. You made a good point there with Duke Miles yesterday in the first half. Guy couldn't really hit anything. Second half comes into play, and I mean they're just facilitating the ball everywhere. And funny enough, the guy starts scoring points, and Vandy just kind of got points in transition. They had a few turnovers here and there, and they were playing really good basketball. So I'm curious to see what today holds for them.
Yeah, they're going to have to play their A game today because Florida is such a complete team. And the one knock I have on them is their backcourt. It's good guard play, but can they hit the shots when it matters most? And I don't think they've been tested to that level just yet in March, where it's a close game and you need that go-ahead shot just to keep yourself alive. Vandy experienced that yesterday on some level. They ended up pulling away at the end because of free throws, but it was a back and forth game from the start. It felt like it was separated by 2 points until about 4 minutes left in the game. So it's going to be a fun one today over in Bridgestone Arena. Let me also tell you, Florida brings a crowd. We were talking yesterday, Jake and I, about who brings the most to the SEC tournament. I don't think there's any argument who brings the most. It's Kentucky. Big Blue Nation travels well. Tennessee probably brings number two. 3 and 4 are playing today, and that's probably Arkansas and Florida. So Vandy fans are going to have to appear in masses, and I think you could probably hit up a local Kentucky fan if you want to go today. So you're going to have to show up. Vandy is going to have to play with no mistakes whatsoever. And if you play with mistakes, you got to reciprocate those by making Florida make mistakes. Florida is going to be on that one line. Florida, honestly, if you were to ask me right now who would win the national championship, that would probably be my pick. I think they're hot. I think they're playing the right kind of basketball at the right time. And I think Todd Golden's a good coach. An a-hole, but a good coach. So Florida, it's going to be a tough challenge for Vanderbilt today. I'm not saying they're incapable of getting it done, but I think Florida is probably going to get things done today and advance into the SEC finals.
Yeah, if Vanderbilt's, I wouldn't say leading rebounder, but yesterday the second leading rebounder was Tyler Tanner. You can't have one of your guards being your rebounding, I guess, lore in this aspect, because Alex Condon, that dude's going to go grab some boards, and he's going to score some points. And if you can't stop him, nobody's stopping Florida. And I think I'd say that's the big focal point for Vanderbilt today, is if they can kind of stop Alex Condon and just the low post. That's how I'd view it.
That's a great point there. It's something I was going to hit on as well. Size is going to be a difference in this one between Vanderbilt and Florida. The story for Vanderbilt all season has been they don't have post presence, and you can't win consistently on an SEC with that dominant post. Florida has that dominant post in Thomas Howe and Alex Condon. So it's going to be, you got to force turnovers, because if they get it into the low post with as skilled as Howe and Condon and as much traveling as they get away with, not to blame officials, but I think that's kind of the general consensus across the SEC, is they get away with a lot because of their size. Regardless, you're going to have to force turnovers, because if they get it into the low post, you're probably either going to get scored on or you're going to get out rebounded just because it's the Florida.
Absolutely. Sorry, you kind of cut in and out there, Connor, but yeah, I was trying to follow along with what you're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're okay. Yeah, no, I agree with you there. Another factor to Vanderbilt's game is opening up room for Tyler Nickel. I know everybody kind of focuses on Duke Miles and Tyler Tanner kind of, you know, move to the basket, but if you can kind of open up some space for Tyler Nickel, this is one of those type of games where it can kind of be a slow creeper around the rim.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting matchup. Florida currently favored by 8.5. So that's a steep spread, but you know the saying, good teams win, great teams cover. Can Vanderbilt be a great team today? On the other side, is Ole Miss just a team of destiny? Yeah, look, if they don't win the SEC tournament, they're not going to March Madness because they have a losing record. But that's a team right now that is just clicking on all cylinders. They took out Alabama last night. Malik Dia is playing some great basketball right now. Chris Beard's a good coach. I think he's lacking in the personality department and the humility, but I think he's a good coach. There's just been a team that's been what the heck happened all year. And now they finally start to look like the team they were last year, a team that went to the Sweet 16. And look, they only lost one key player, and that's Sean Padula, who hit the buzzer beater against Arkansas last year. Can Ole Miss replicate what they did to Arkansas last year this year with how they're playing?
Not one bit, Connor. And I hate to tell you this, buddy. I've been bit by the Calipari bug. This team, I think, is destined to go to the SEC championship game. Arkansas looks really good. They play really good. I understand, you know, Calipari gives full carte blanche for Acuff to do whatever. But again, when Acuff is capitalizing on every opportunity he's given, how can you not back the Razorbacks? I mean, woo pig suey at this point. Ole Miss,
nope.
You make a great point.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry. You make a good point, Connor, about Ole Miss being one of those teams of possible destiny. I think the road stops here today at 2:30. They just can't get it done. And again, as I say that, they'll probably go out and score 68 points, 70 points, and win the game by 4. I don't know. But I just see the Arkansas Razorbacks as a team that is destined to go to the championship.
I would partially agree with you. I think Arkansas gets it done today. But you also got to take into account, this is a man I've known for 15 years. This is a guy who on multiple occasions has said, I don't care about the SEC tournament. It does not matter to me. So I could fully see them go out and lay an egg today. They almost did last night against Oklahoma. Ultimately, I think talent just took over, but it wasn't because of John Calipari and his coaching. It's never because of John Calipari and his coaching. So we'll see how that one looks today. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Coming up next, I want to talk about a couple of losing fan bases from yesterday. How should Tennessee and Kentucky fans feel after losing yesterday in the SEC tournament? We'll get to your phones and texts coming up next. Hang with me, Dustin. I'll get right to you at the top of the segment. But coming up next, we'll talk about Kentucky and Tennessee. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you on 102.5 The Game. Gamecock, Darius Rucker bringing us back in today on this Saturday. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Christian Skelton here with you on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game. We are with you till 11:30, so we got an extra half hour with you as we get you set for Vanderbilt and Florida coming up at noon. Couple of losing fan bases from the SEC yesterday I want to talk about with you, Nick Frazier. Tennessee and Kentucky, arguably the two biggest fan bases that come to this tournament. Both sent home yesterday. Kentucky sent home by Florida, and Tennessee, of course, sent home by Vanderbilt. Before we get into that, let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, and welcome in our good friend and resident Wildcat fan, member of the Blue Nation, along with myself, Dustin in Hopkinsville, who wants to comment on the Cats. Dustin, go ahead.
Good morning, morning, guys. Yeah, we suffered a loss, but we kind of expected it against Florida. But I feel good. Only thing my team couldn't do was hit a dang basket. We get 10 to 15 more percent on baskets, that can change momentum and can take 10 to 15% away from Florida. And you just can't stop those corn-fed boys on Florida's team. I'm proud of my bench. They really came to play in this tournament. Missouri's no joke. LSU, whatever. But Missouri really is no joke. They're a tough team. We came to play, and I felt like yesterday, if we could keep Florida below 75 points, which we did, we had a chance to win. We just couldn't hit a dang basket to save our lives. I feel good about my UK team, not to win a championship, but to go out and compete in every game that they play, and the other team on the other side better be ready, because my Cats, they do have some dog in them. If Chandler is on,
oh yeah,
you can't beat UK. You cannot beat them if Chandler is hitting threes. I'm sorry.
He's Captain Clutch, baby. Thanks.
Yeah.
Dustin, stick around after 11. I got a hot topic for Kentucky fans along with Connor Newt. You'll want to hear it.
Hey, real quick on them jerseys. I was voted best dressed along with a Russian guy in my high school my senior year. I'm going to say two words that why the old jerseys, in my opinion, were basic. All right, you don't wear brown and black together, guys. If you're a well-dressed man, you know that. Two-tone blue. You never wear the same color of two tones together, and it drove me nuts for years. I always thought our jerseys were basic, loved the players that were in them, but I'm a man of style, and I really always thought we had some basic jerseys. And I like the Oilers jersey that Will Levis wore that year he played. The only thing I don't like about this new one, them dang stripes on the side. It's not lingerie, guys. What are we doing here?
Yeah, they
go. Right, y'all have a good one.
Thank you, Dustin.
Thanks for the call, Dustin. I like the lights. But I understand the point. On the Kentucky front, he brings it up, and that's exactly the direction I wanted to go to. I think Kentucky should feel good heading into this March Madness tournament. They're playing a lot better down the stretch. They just ran into a good Florida team. I mean, Missouri is a good team. I think they should be in, maybe not at large, but they should be in. And then, you know, I think you've got players playing good level basketball. Colin Chandler, he brought up, is a great example of that. Colin Chandler's the kind of guy that's going to hit a shot when you need him to. He reminds me of Aaron Harrison back in the day. Do you remember Aaron Harrison, Nick Frazier?
Oh, yeah, on those Kentucky teams. It was what, in the mid-2010s, like 2013, right?
That was the 2014 tournament.
No one will ever forget the 2014 tournament. One of the greatest tournaments of all time.
Yeah, the Harrison twins, right?
Yes, they basically, anytime Kentucky needed a big shot, they hit it every single time.
This is the part where he always hits it against Wisconsin. They went to the national championship that year, and we don't need to talk about what happened next. But that's who Colin Chandler reminds me of. The kind of guy that when he throws up a big shot in a moment like that, you know it's going to go in. Captain Clutch, as we call him. He's a good player. Owe, I think, is playing good basketball down the stretch. Denzel Aberdeen is sort of coming into his own. Cam Williams being back is huge for Kentucky. That's someone that can hit the outside shot when you need him to. And the bigs are playing good minutes. Malachi Moreno is playing great. I feel good about Kentucky. Like Dustin said, this isn't a team I would pick to win a national championship. I think the Sweet 16 is probably their ceiling, which is a little bit disheartening knowing how much this roster costed. But if you go back to the beginning of the season, a lot of us thought that this team wasn't going to make the tournament. So I think the fact that we're talking about them playing good basketball heading into the March Madness tournament is a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that I can't say the same thing for my Bulldogs because they're just not as great as Kentucky right now. But
you need to fire Chris Jans. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, we both were talking about that when they were taking on Auburn. I'm like, goodness gracious. They had a good lead in the first half, and then it all fell apart. I mean, everything can't run through Josh Hubbard. I'm sorry. It just can't.
That's the next question. Does he stay on campus?
He might.
Nope.
He's coming
to Kentucky.
If Mississippi State gives him enough money, I'm sure he'll stay.
Yeah, money talks. You're 100% right.
It really does. And I was listening to the Dan Patrick Show not too long ago. I think it was Thursday is what it was. He was talking to Jim Boeheim. And Boeheim was like, how much money does it take to really have a good college basketball roster? And he said, has to be at least $10 million. And I'm thinking, I'm like, golly, $10 million seems like a lot. But when you look at teams like Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, those marquee teams, they're probably spending a little more than $10 million just to have a product out there that can win at least, what, 20 basketball games to make the dance.
Let's go back to our phone lines. Edward is on the line waiting very patiently. Edward, go ahead.
Hey, guys, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Just out running and listening to the show. Enjoy it. I went Wednesday to the SEC tournament, to the first set of quad games, I guess, the Kentucky, LSU, and then the Ole Miss or Mississippi State and Auburn game. It'd been a long time since I'd been to a Kentucky Wildcat game. I think the last one, believe it or not, was probably when NTSU beat them in 82. And everyone thought that they were going to have Kentucky versus Louisville in the second round, and it did not happen because of MTSU's upset. They had Sam Bowie, Melvin Turpin on that team. But The two comments I want to make about the tournament, one, I'd always heard here in the last 20, 25 years, Big Blue Nation. I was shocked at how many fans they brought to a team that's not even in the top 25. It was incredible. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even close to LSU fans, Auburn fans, or Mississippi State fans. And, you know, they were all fairly nice. I talked to several of them. So, anyway, that's my comment. Second comment, I was close enough to some of the games. I guess I was appalled almost at the language that coaches and players use towards the referees, and the referees take it. I see it a lot in the NBA right now, but it's gotten a lot worse. Referees have to demand that respect and make those calls. The Kentucky coach used some pretty foul language towards one of the referees. He eventually got called on a technical, or the player did, and then he jumped in. I thought the announcers thought that he was going to get thrown out. I mean, he even made the comment he's probably going to be watching this one from the locker. But he, I guess, recomposed. They're playing. Every time you go out, I guess you're playing for your job. But anyway, those are my comments. I'd like for y'all to make a statement on them, if you don't mind, especially about the referees. You don't hear much of that, but the abuse they take, and I've gone to basketball games my entire life, and I just see it getting worse every year, the crap they put up with. And they should.
Yeah.
If you would have nipped this in the bud when it first started, you wouldn't have these issues. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Edward. I appreciate the call.
Enjoy that run.
Look, on the referee thing, he's got a point. Mark Pope, I can't imagine cussing out a referee just because he's so level-headed. But, you know, Doug Schaus is a referee that is not great. So, you know, on the referee things, he has a point. Referees are to be treated with respect, but it's also something you've got to earn that respect. And if you are blatantly making calls that are against what the rule book says, then, you know, players and coaches may have the right to say something. Should he be teed up for that? Probably, just because that's the nature of the game. And, you know, Jesus says the golden rule is treat others as you would be treated. So maybe we need to take that into account when it comes to referees. I think he has a point in that referees are being disrespected these days. I wouldn't want to be a college referee. I wouldn't want to be a little league referee just because of the constant subjective nature you are put up against. It's always your fault to someone. So
let's put it this way, Connor, like looking at Auburn this past week, Bruce Pearl made it about himself, and Joe made a good point about it yesterday. Like, Bruce Pearl made it all about himself, going after, you know, XYZ, and even Jim Boeheim said this on Dan Patrick, like, parents ruin things. They ruin everything. It's not about the parents, it's about the players. And also, too, when it comes to the referees taking, you know, the bludgeon on most parts of this with the language and, you know, the physical activity on the court, it's happening in every sport. I mean, you may not hear it on TV, but I guarantee you there is a lot of smack talk between players and referees and all other sports. You could mention football, Definitely baseball. You saw it last night in baseball. Hockey for sure. It's almost like that's the second language, is to talk just nasty, you know, explicit language to other players and referees, and they take it like a champ. So, Edward, to your point, man, like, it's in every sport. And I was a little league referee at one point for soccer, and there were parents just eviscerating me, not with terrible language, but like, hey man, that was an awful call. I'm like, I mean the ball didn't go out of bounds. Yes, it did. No, the full ball has to go on the outside of the line. And people would argue with me. I'm like, look, I don't have to throw you out because that's not the guy I want to be, and I know you want to enjoy watching your kid play, but allow me to do my job. And so I think that's kind of what a lot of people don't realize, is these referees, they have to go through training, they have to go through schools. And to that point, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's in every single league out there in the world.
Yeah, it's a conversation. Real quick before we head to the break, we talked a lot about Kentucky this segment, which thank you for that. How should Tennessee fans feel heading into March? I mean, they're probably locked in on that six line, maybe a five, but, you know, I think they're playing basketball down the stretch. Offense has to be a concern if you're a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, it really does. Christian has more on that than I do.
Yeah,
really.
It's not the best right now. I mean, if Jacoby Gillespie can't find a shot, you know, it's kind of hard to beat teams with only having, you know, one score, which is Nate Amon. And, you know, Vandy did a great job of shutting him down yesterday, aside from, you know, they get forced him to earn everything at the line, which I had no problem with, because that's just basketball, you know. That's just what you got to do. But, yeah, if Jacoby can't get his shot going, I don't see him sticking around very long. I mean, honestly,
SEC first teamer, Jacoby Gillespie.
Yeah, for some reason. No offense to him if he's listening, but no, I would treat a Sweet 16 this year like I would a Final Four most years, to be honest. Like, I would be ecstatic about that. But, and it's funny, I was sitting there, you know, watching the Auburn game, because I was at the Auburn game, and I was like, ah, well, this kind of sucks. But I was like, I'd kind of rather be a six seed anyway. But then, you know, they start making the comeback, and I'm not thinking about that. I'm like, I'm here. I want to beat Auburn. And so now they're probably gonna be a five seed, and I don't like the 5-12 death trap, especially if you're playing a team like High Point that just knocks the lights out.
So yeah. Elite Miami, Eight is just Ohio. Not the ceiling anymore?
Not this year. Definitely not. No.
First round exit?
It could happen. Like I said, you run into a 12 seed that can really shoot the ball. I don't like our chances. I'm not going to lie.
Uh-oh.
He's level-headed. He's one of the few Vols that is level-headed, and I appreciate that about him.
I try to be realistic, you know?
I take the Nick Frazier approach to college basketball, and I will never, ever pull against my team to lose, and I expect the best out of every game. That said, I would much rather be a 7 seed than an 8 seed. So I think that would probably – that's probably going to happen. Kentucky's probably going to be a 7, which is good, because you don't want to play that 8-9 game. And even if you win that 8-9 game, you run into the 1 seed, which I would anticipate probably being Duke in Kentucky's region. So it's – seeding is fun. Seeding is weird, but seeding is fun. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Since we got an extra 30 minutes, I've got something to rant about in Newt's Notes coming up next right here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game.
I have Newt's Notes in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me.
Weekend Huddle here on
102.5
The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Chris Skelton with you. And I look like what Randy Orton did to Cody Rhodes last night. I mean, heel 2009 Randy Orton is back in our lives. And for that, we are grateful. But I want to keep it on the college basketball track here. There is a narrative being put out there right now, and I just saw a tweet from John Rothstein that even fuels this, that Darius A. Cuff Jr. from Arkansas is the best guard that John Calipari has ever coached. Wrong. There is no comparison between Darius A. Cuff and some of the guards Kentucky and John Calipari have produced. In fact, I can name 5 Kentucky guards that were more important and better to their team than Darius A. Cuff was.
Please elaborate. I would like to hear. Sorry. Again, open-ended. I didn't know if that was coming to me or not. Go ahead.
I also thought it like might have cut out or something. Yeah, you know, it's hard sometimes over Zoom. It's like, oh, do I talk? I don't know.
Nah, well, it's because I'm not here and I'm day-to-day with an upper body injury. I mean, of course, first and foremost, if we're talking about the greatest guards in the history of John Calipari's coaching, there's only one man that comes to mind immediately at that number one spot. John Wall. John Wall is way better than Darius Akuff. Of course, averaged 18.7 points per game, 4.2 and 8.9 assists. For context, Darius Akuff is averaging 22.3 and 6. So, yes, from a point scoring standpoint, maybe Akuff might have the upper edge, but no one provided more to that team than John Wall did. He was surrounded by talent, of course, but his main role was to facilitate the ball and facilitate to DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Bledsoe and Patrick Patterson and that whole, but Daniel Orton, that whole team. John Wall, of course, being the number one overall pick, is infinitely better than Darius Akuff was, at least in terms of the roles that they played for their teams. I would go De'Aaron Fox is a better player than Darius Akuff. De'Aaron Fox is similar to John Wall, and he was able to facilitate the ball, but he was also a slashing point guard. He was capable of finding an open Malik Monk or the known third best player on that team who just dropped 83 points in an NBA game the other day, Bam Adebayo. De'Aaron Fox, I believe, is better than Darius Akuff. Tyrese Maxey, I think, is better than Darius Akuff. He was more of a point-scoring point guard, and I know he didn't average nearly as much as Akuff is, but you also got to think that these Kentucky teams are better and more talented than this Arkansas team is. De'Aaron Fox was on that team. Or I'm sorry, Tyrese Maxey was on a team with Emmanuel Quickley and Nick Richards, who was capable of finding the rim pretty easily. This is a team that was riding hot and playing some hot basketball at the time before the tournament was canceled. So in my mind, I think that's a team that could have gone to the national championship. Or again, we're playing hypotheticals here. But in my mind, that's a team that could have gone to the national championship, and it's because of Tyrese Maxey on that team. Number four, former NBA MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think is a better player than Darius Akuff Jr., an elite point-scoring point guard, again, on a team that was just loaded with talent. You know, Shai, Kevin Knox, he wasn't that great, but he contributed a lot to that team. E.J. Montgomery, who is arguably the worst player to ever put on a Kentucky uniform. But Shai, I think, in terms of point scoring and getting to the rim and even facilitating, kind of like these other point guards I'm mentioning, is better than Darius Akuff. And the last one, of course, would be Tyler York. Maybe not an NBA prospect, maybe didn't pan out in the big leagues, but Tyler Ulis, Vanderbilt fans know, Tyler Ulis, a guy that could just take over any game, anytime, anywhere. A guy that could get to the rim, facilitate, play some defense, a guy that could hit anything from beyond the arc. I think all five of those point guards in the John Calipari history of coaching point guard are better than Darius Akuff Jr.
That is, I rest my case. Spot on, Connor. John Wall, for me, top of the list. I remember seeing him at Memorial Gym with DeMarcus Cousins. That is easily the best college basketball performance I've ever watched in my entire life. So to say Akuff is the best out of all the Calipari guards, I would strongly disagree with you.
And that's just Kentucky guards. There's one other guard that Calipari coached, didn't play at Kentucky, that I think is better than Darius Akuff Jr.
And
Derrick Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Derrick Rose out of Memphis, obviously the number one pick in the NBA draft. That team went to a national championship with him, lost, of course, because it's John Calipari. But Derrick Rose, the ultimate slashing point guard. I look at some of the guards around the league and I think you wouldn't have this if it weren't for Derrick Rose and John Wall, two of the most revolutionary point guards in the history of basketball. So there you go. Darius Akuff, not even top five in terms of best point guards that Calipari has ever coached.
The one that you said on that list that stuck out to me was Tyler Ulis, because obviously, you know, that is that a complicated relationship now since he's on Cal's coaching staff at Arkansas, or is it all love from Wildcats?
He's still beloved because he's not like some of these other Wildcats that claim Arkansas now. He's still a Kentucky guy, but, you know, seeing him on an Arkansas staff is pretty interesting.
Basically has the exact opposite haircut as he did when he was in college too, right? Like he's got the long ponytail and everything. And, you know, back in college, he kind of had the buzz cut, didn't he? From what I remember. Yeah. So,
yes, I have been passed a note by my dad as I'm here at home recovering from my injury. He wrote out for me, and I'll show you on the stream. He says the best Calipari guard ever is Cal himself. He always guards his team from winning games in March.
Tremendous job, Rick Newt. That
is great. Rick the man, man. He is awesome.
He's standing outside my door just laughing right now.
Love me some Rick Newt, man.
You love a good dad joke that's actually funny, you know? And that was one that was actually funny. So good job.
Yeah, well, I feel like I need to post this top five and see who sends their bots after me today.
You should post it. I think it would definitely grab some attention of Kentucky fans along with college basketball fans in general. I mean, it's SEC tournament day. Kentucky's not on the weekend poll. They're not in the weekend tournament here. Might as well just post them.
That was an hour ago.
Yeah, that was an hour ago. Excuse me.
But you are right, though. Kentucky was not the weekend poll. That was the Titans. So you weren't completely wrong.
That is true.
It was another one of my teams hanging on my wall of fandom. If you guys are watching the stream, here's the wall of fandom right here.
Wow, this is amazing.
This is horrible radio. The Titans, Kentucky, the Cardinals, Kentucky again. The Grizzlies, who will be relegated to last, and of course the Purds.
The Purds.
There you go.
Playoff Purds.
Playoff Purds.
Playoff Purds.
Soon? Question mark.
It's coming.
Coming soon. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Coming up next, Nick Frazier says he has a question for some Kentucky fans on the other side. I'm very interested to hear about this. So we'll get to that on the other side in hour 2.5 here on the Weekend Huddle on 102.5 The Game.